Hey, indie filmmakers, I'm Griffin Hammond.
I'm Nick Bodmer, and on this week's episode, we're diagnosing a frame rate problem in my latest footage.
Plus, your questions about handling audio tracks in Final Cut Pro 10, producing a compelling story, and how to make a video podcast like ours.
Griffin!
Hello!
We're in person.
Let's shake hands.
Whoa!
Not an editing trick.
No, that's real. He's in my house.
Yeah.
Welcome to my new office.
Yeah, we're both in Las Vegas this week.
I was just in New York while you were in LA, but we have landed finally in the same spot.
Yeah.
With all our travel.
The cool thing is, now that I'm right here, right now, I can diagnose issues with your editing, which is what we're going to do today. But first, I can diagnose an issue with your XLR cable, because you have a tendency, you're real jittery. You shake your leg a lot, and I'm sure you're just knocking into this XLR cable right now. I don't know.
Thanks. It's nice to have him here to tell me all the things I do wrong. It's really a pleasure.
I don't really have a good way to deal with this.
You know, you could have fixed it before we started rolling.
Here, I'll hang it over my mic.
There. So you're saying when I bang on the cable, it's shaking my mic and introducing
I bet
audio.
It is. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting.
All right.
I'm going to start kicking your cable.
So I was happy that we made a mistake on last week's episode and no one noticed.
Yes. Is it my mistake or a different mistake?
It's your mistake.
Oh, damn. Okay.
So at the end of the episode, you talked about some drone footage you shot with the DJI Spark.
Yep.
With your family. Beautiful drone footage.
Thank you.
And you sent me the footage to include in the episode.
Right.
And it looks pretty good.
Looked great, I thought.
But there's definitely some problem with it.
Yeah, you called me out on it. Well, not called me out. Let me know about it. So what? Explain what you saw, and then...
Yeah.
And then we'll jump into it.
So, at first, I didn't know if I was seeing anything. I just thought I was seeing a little bit of, like, judder, some frame movement that didn't look right. Like, you had this perfect zooming out, moving away from the desert shot.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't moving perfectly. It was kind of, like, pulsing.
Okay.
It seemed like. And so, my first instinct is, I bet you shot in 30 frames a second, and you probably edited it in 24.
Okay.
So we're probably getting, you know, we're losing some frames, and there's some...
Some made-up frames in there, maybe.
Yeah. Or it's just, different size gap between frames. But when I looked at it, bring it up in QuickTime real quick.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, here's the shot.
What?
Play it real quick. Do you see that pulsing?
I do now.
Yeah. At first, you might just assume, like, oh, that's the computer failing to keep up, or maybe it's some weird frame rate issue. But yeah, there's definitely something happening there. So just go frame by frame. Just stop it. You can push space.
Let me go back to that other shot. It might be a little easier.
Yeah. Yeah, the more movement, the better, probably. Oh, right there.
Right there.
Yeah.
Same frame twice.
Yeah, so every 5 frames in your footage, there's a duplicate frame. Yep,
every 10th frame, it seems like.
Or yeah, every 10th frame. And then if you go 5 more frames ahead, it's harder to notice, but there is a skipped frame.
Oh,
right there.
Big jump.
Yeah.
Nice, big.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is weird, because pull up, do Command I to bring up the info. If we look at this clip, it's a 1080 clip. It's shot in 2997.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an edited clip.
This is an export from...
Yeah.
My footage. That's not what you want, is it? You want to see the original?
We'll look at the original in a moment. But like, this is my...
This is what I sent to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is what I was going through. I was thinking, all right, well, I'm probably looking at a 24 frame clip or something. No,
yeah.
I'm not. I'm actually looking at a 30 frame clip. And the weirdness is that we're not just skipping frames or just duplicating frames. We're doing both.
Right. In a strange cadence.
Yeah. So it kind of feels like you shot it in 30 and exported it in 30, but somewhere in the middle, something happened that confused this. I don't know. So yeah, let's go look at your original footage in Final Cut.
Okay. So here's Final Cut. These are I have 3 different projects with different timelines, and here are the original clips. I can maybe make these a little smaller.
So what's funny is I feel like normally I would want to know a lot more before we started recording the podcast, like, we would have already solved this problem.
But we literally haven't, because we thought it would be more fun to do it live. Yes. What if we can't solve the problem?
We may not be able to figure
it out. Okay, we may not know what happened.
So. All right, so let's start with, what are these? These are all exports? Or
Those are different projects.
Oh, you have different projects.
I just, to make those three files, but this, we can just work with this one. This one has everything.
Well, let's start by, just select each project. Let's look, we'll look at the info for each one.
Okay, so I'm going to go to the info pane over here. Yeah. And I'll go to this first project.
It's 2997.
Yeah.
The next one is 2997. The next one is 2997. So they all look right. And now go into one of the projects.
Okay.
And just let's select each clip and make sure they're all 2997. That one is, yeah. 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 All right. So now right click on one of these clips and say reveal in browser. And we'll go to the source footage, yeah, which is also showing up. It's 2997.
Yep.
So now I'm a little stumped.
Okay.
Because your project settings match.
I
did
set up my project properly.
Yeah. In fact, how did you set up your project?
I think I did it manually. I think I went in to file new project. I want to say I looked and said I want 1080p.
Yeah.
And I want it 2997.
So you don't do the use automatic settings.
In fact, I don't even. Where is use automatic settings?
Right here.
No, I didn't do that.
Yeah. So yeah, you have two ways you could do this. You could set up a project with the correct settings, then drop your footage in, or you can do automatic settings where Final Cut will set your project settings based on the first clip. Mm-hmm. But either one of these should work.
Should work. Well, should we go to the original raw footage and see if the drop frames are present?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
If I can find it.
So yeah, just right click on it and say Reveal in Finder.
Reveal in Finder. Okay.
Open it up in QuickTime.
Open in QuickTime.
And let's go ahead and, yeah, we'll look at the settings real quick. This is also an H.264 file, 1080, it's 2997. So yeah, let's see if the skipped frames are here.
Do you just go frame by frame?
Play it first. We should be able to notice it. This looks clean.
Oh.
I don't know, it looks clean to me. Go frame by frame, just go back frame by frame and see if you ever see any. Wait, was that a skipped frame?
No, I think it was just a little slow. I went backwards there. No, I'm good.
Yeah, it's all there.
It's all there.
So that's really weird. We have good footage with no skipping, meaning your SD card is moving quickly enough to capture this. You're bringing it in. It's the correct project settings. So it has to be something in the way you're exporting it.
Okay.
Actually, no. One thing we haven't checked yet. In Final Cut,
do we see it?
Do we see the skipped frames? Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back.
Because this is what you exported.
This
you
is
exported,
what I exported
from this.
Yeah. You want to watch it?
Yeah, watch it. I think it's pulsing. Go frame by frame.
Yep.
Yeah. That is
and
so
frame.
Weird.
So you can see there, 6 seconds and 11 frames, and 6 seconds, 12 frames are exactly the same.
So it's not your export settings. Final Cut is screwing this up somehow.
Interesting.
It's interpreting your footage, your time code wrong.
What if we do, I'm going to do a new project,
and
I am going to use automatic settings.
Yeah.
I'm going to call this pulse test.
Pulse test.
And I'm going to create it. And now I'm going to grab the same clip that we've been, it's a different clip. Should I use that same? Let me use that same piece of footage.
Yeah.
In. And that should be enough, right?
Yeah,
out.
That's good.
And let me drop that in.
Huh.
Ooh, interesting.
All right, so for those of you listening, Nick just went, he set in and out points on this clip. Went to, which button did you push to put it in the timeline?
E.
Yeah. As soon as he went to throw it in the timeline, Final Cut brought up an error that says the video properties of this clip are not standard, which is strange because they look standard. But it seems to still want to do a 1080 2997 project. So go ahead and hit OK, I guess. Wait, now it looks clean to me. So now go frame by frame. I think it's good now. That's really weird.
Very strange.
Go back to your other project. So this looks like this would be one way to solve it, is to do an automatic settings project.
Yeah.
In this project, I'm curious, if you click on this first clip, that we know it's a problem, and you go to the retiming menu, and what if we said automatic speed? Normally, automatic speed would be if you had a 60-frame clip and you put it in 2997 timeline, it'll slow it down to 50% speed. But I've also done it sometimes when I have weird footage, like you have 30p footage in a 2997 timeline.
Still there.
Still there. Yeah, so that didn't solve it. Very strange.
Well, we should turn to our audience and say, what in the world are we doing wrong? I should have screenshotted that error that came up with the automatic settings.
Yeah, you could do that one more time.
All right, if I delete this, will it redo it?
I don't know. Let's find out. Yeah. Yeah, screenshot that. So yeah, this is concerning because it makes it feel like anyone who is shooting with a DJI Spark in Final Cut Pro 10 could be running into this problem. But that's me. I've been shooting with Spark in Final Cut 10, and I don't think I've been encountering this pulsing. Or if anything, you wouldn't think that I've encountered it because I noticed it the first time I watched your footage. And I never noticed it in my own footage.
Right.
Maybe your footage is just so good. It's such a perfect...
So cinematic.
Yeah.
It's Lord of the Rings-esque. It's beautiful. Okay, so mystery not solved, but we found some interesting things to look at.
The only other thing I want to know is what version of Final Cut are you using?
I'm up to date. Let's take a look.
You are in 10.4.2. I think they've updated to 0.3 just in the last week.
Okay.
So you could...
Yeah, I shot this and edited this a week or two ago.
Yeah. You could update again, but... I don't know.
Fairly up to date.
That'll solve it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's weird.
Very strange. But hey, it wasn't me being really stupid. I mean, that's kind of what I think you were looking for, is to be like, hey, Nick, you dummy, you got to pick the right frame rate when you make a project.
Right. I just assume. I mean, that's a really common issue you see in people's YouTube videos. You'll see some frame skipping and jumping, and you just assume, oh, they shot in 30 and edited in 24.
Yeah.
In fact, I mean, I know professionals that purposefully do that. They'll edit in 24 because they're sure it looks more cinematic.
Right.
But then their 24 frame footage has to go on a television station that's in 30. So if you shoot in 24, edit in 24, and then put it on TV in 30, you're going to have to skip some frames.
Right.
And you get that weird judder, and I hate it.
Well, that wasn't the issue today.
Yeah. Well, and if there's another lesson for everyone, it's that we put this in the podcast last week. No one said a thing about it.
Right.
It's not that noticeable. And the audience is never looking at your footage like, what's wrong with it?
And what do we deliver the podcast in, 30?
Podcast is in 2997, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah. It should have been apparent in the final video on YouTube as
right.
well.
Right. Although YouTube makes it, it's not easy on YouTube to pause and go frame by frame, I don't think.
Yeah.
So it'd be hard for people to...
Diagnose the issue like you did.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
We'll do some research. Maybe we'll have another follow-up next week. On what we think is going on there.
Yeah, let's answer some questions.
Let's answer some questions. So we have a hashtag Ask Griffin question from Philip Nichols. Griffin, what are you most likely to forget when packing for a trip?
Oh, well, you know what I forgot recently on a trip?
Clothes.
No, my driver's license.
Hmm.
I guess I don't usually forget that, but that was bad.
And you need that to... Get on the airplane,
yeah.
You need that to rent a car.
Right.
This caused some issues, I take it?
Yeah, I couldn't rent my car. I was able to board the plane, though, because LaGuardia does fingerprint scanning. I'm enrolled in the CLEAR program that does fingerprints.
But if you hadn't had that, you would have not been able to...
Actually, in retrospect, my understanding now is, especially because I'm a trusted traveler with the TSA, I think I could go talk to the TSA, and I may have to fill out a form that says, yes, this is my address, but they
might be subject to more advanced screening.
Right, right.
One could anticipate. What did you do when you couldn't rent a car? Just Uber everywhere?
Yeah, that's what I did, yeah.
Yeah. And did you, was it just your driver's license, or were you missing credit cards?
Oh, I forgot my whole wallet.
Whole wallet.
Yeah.
So you lived on Apple Pay?
Apple Pay, yeah.
And you were able to survive a trip using only Apple Pay?
Yeah, I'm trying to, I don't even remember where I went. I feel like it was, why do I not remember this?
I want to say Philadelphia.
No, no, no. It was Bloomington.
Chicago. Oh yeah, for the last time. Yes.
And I was kind of like, how far am I going to get in a not an urban setting with Apple Pay? But actually, I did okay. Yeah.
All right. Good. Glad to hear it. Okay. You want me to read these?
Yeah.
Since you're a little far away from the screen.
We put all the questions on your screen, so maybe you need to read all of them.
I can do that. We've got an email from Andy. My question is, when editing a two-person interview with Final Cut, is there a way to level audio if you're using a track that is already mixed? Otherwise, is there simple software or within Final Cut that will level and mix single tracks effectively?
So help me make sure I understand this question. I'm wondering if maybe Andy means he's recorded something, a video clip that already has a left and right channel audio, and he's wondering if he can edit them independently, or is he saying these two channels of audio, like the two microphones, are already mixed?
That's my understanding, is the two channels of audio, the two microphones, are mixed down to a single, probably stereo waveform, but combined left and right.
Like if right now you and I were talking into our two microphones.
Right.
And
the recorder was mixing it together for us at whatever levels we already set.
Yeah. If that's the case, I don't think you can do anything.
Well, you can. I mean, the one thing is, you can man. If you're worried about levels, you can go in there and man every time. You know, if it's a back and forth, if we're talking over each other, which we do a little bit, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
But if in a situation like this where we're talking back and forth, I can go in and if I'm a little quieter than Griffin, you know, I can make my little keyframes and make myself louder. I've had to do this with weddings often when I have a single mic on the groom and it's recording the bride and the groom and the bride is quieter.
Yeah.
Often I will manually go in there and do it. But a little trick is you can, if you play with the compressor, you can do this in a way where you basically tell the compressor to ignore levels above your louder source, but bring things up that are quieter than that so that it basically keeps the loud person the same but automatically applies gain to the quieter source. So with clever compressor use, you can do this. For the cleanest sound, you might need to keyframe it.
And I will say, this is probably the appropriate time to apologize for audio issues we may have in this episode. I'm guessing we may have a little bit of reverb happening because you're talking into your mic, I'm talking into my mic, but our two mics are 2 feet apart from each other. So there probably is a little bit of that.
We probably sound bad.
So let's also answer Andy's question in case he's just talking about, because he's talking about Final Cut, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And Final Cut does kind of make it confusing. If you did, like in our case, we're recording your audio onto the left channel, my audio onto the right channel, but then in Final Cut, we're separating those and we're making them mono, so they're coming across both speakers.
Right.
But if you are recording one video clip with a left and right audio channel, it's not immediately clear in Final Cut how you're supposed to edit those separately.
Right.
And the way that I've always done it is, you can detach audio in Final Cut.
Yep.
And then you could duplicate it. You can just option drag or copy paste. And then on one of them, you could turn off the right channel. And on the other one, you could turn off the left channel. And you've effectively separated.
So you can, I've never done this on a video's audio track. You can't do the dual mono on the audio track from a video file?
I think you can. But if you had a left channel audio and a right channel audio and you told it to be dual mono, I think it would just mix them.
I see.
Okay. And so you'd be creating the problem that we think Andy's talking about.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's possible he may be able to split those apart, but if he's stuck with them together, then he's going to have to do some creative editing.
All right, we got an email from Willie. I'm having a weird issue in Final Cut Pro 10. I sync the sound like it's prescribed, but then I can't get rid of the camera sound.
Yeah.
I obviously want to keep the Rode sound I record on my Tascam recorder.
So He has a Tascam recorder, a Rode mic, separate from his camera.
Mm-hmm. He's doing a sync, so it's using the camera audio and the Rode mic to sync it together.
And he's smart to have audio with his camera. He hasn't turned off.
A lot easier,
But now that he's done the syncing, just like we do for the podcast, he's stuck with audio he doesn't want. The bad audio is on top of the good audio.
Yep.
So how do you get rid of that?
A couple different ways. You can just drag the volume down all the way on that one clip, right? He's got a synced clip, right?
Yeah, he's already
synced
it.
So you can open the compound clip. I'm going like I have a compound clip. Yeah, I don't. It's a right click.
You can either right click on it and say open, or depending, it depends on the version of Final Cut you're in.
Yeah.
I think now they've taken away that and you can just double click the clip.
And that will expand that compound clip to show you the both inside clips, and you can just drag the audio down.
Yeah, it pretty much just opens that compound clip in its own timeline.
Right.
And you can now see those two audio clips. So yeah, then you just lower the audio on your video file.
Or, you know, if it's on the video file, you could expand it so audio and video are separate, and then I think you can just select the audio track and hit V and disable it, which is going to do the same thing as dragging the volume all the way down.
But that is kind of a confusing thing. Like, if you're syncing something for the first time in Final Cut doesn't tell you, hey, you're probably going to want to go inside your compound clip right now and turn off your other audio. Like,
right.
It doesn't make that very obvious how to fix
And I
that.
Use compound clips a lot with multiple video sources when I don't want to deal all the way with multi-cam editing. I might just do a compound clip with two video files, so I will double click into it. And actually, that's where I do my edits between cameras.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, boy. This is one of those names I would hope you would be the one to have to pronounce. I've got a Twitter question from...
Tulasi.
Wouldn't have gotten that. I often hear from YouTubers that you should shoot in 4K but export in 1080p because 4K downgraded to 1080 is always much better detail than default 1080. How true is that?
Tulasi, that is true. It is true that 4K, even edited in 1080, looks better than 1080 edited in 1080.
Why, Griffin?
I think it's just you have more data coming in. The camera doesn't have to be the piece of software that down-reses.
Yep.
Presumably, your editing software is more
powerful
and you know has more time to deal with how do we re-render this down to 1080. But I will say, it's not that noticeable. Like, it's true that it's always better, but I don't know if it's always much better. It's just a little better.
It's a little better.
And you would only notice if you had the opportunity to side-by-side test, which I have, which is the only reason I know that it's worthwhile.
Yeah.
But if you're never...
This from the guy who noticed one freaking skip frame in my drone footage.
But your audience will never notice the difference. So, like, you know, right now we're shooting the podcast, and we are recording it in 1080.
Yeah, I was like, oh, now that we're here and we don't have to deal with sending files over the internet, do you want to record this in 4K? And Griffin was like, no.
I thought, I don't need to take up more space on my hard drive. I still am going to have to edit this, and maybe the computer will run a little bit slower if I have two 4K streams. I mean, it would be able to handle it. But
three, because we've got three cameras going today.
So actually, we are recording 4K on one camera, just because I figured maybe I'd want to be able to punch in on it. But the other two, the close-ups of us, are both 1080 today.
Right. The way I think about why the quality might be better is... Anytime you're exporting or you know creating a new video file, that's a lossy process, right? So you want the highest quality all the way down to that point where you're going, you know, doing that lossy conversion.
Yeah.
It just gives you more data to work with when it makes that lossy file.
Yeah.
We've got a YouTube comment from Goat Cheese for Me. Hey, Griffin, do you have any tips for getting out of writer's block rut? He's got an idea for a documentary regarding a cool place he worked at, and he had a general idea of what he wanted to say. And he says, ever since he watched your Science of Storytelling podcast and your online class where you outlined the Dan Harmon story circle, he struggled with if his documentary would be more of the here's an outline of this cool place and some random facts about it versus a search and discovery.
Yeah. I know exactly what he's talking about because it's kind of the struggle I went through with Sriracha, which is you go and explore something you're curious about. I think that's a good place to start with a documentary, something you're actually interested in. And you learn all these facts. You know, I learned that there's 100 million pounds of peppers that are harvested every year. And that's a cool stat. I want you to learn that. And there's a lot of fun things I learned that I'm excited to tell you in the film. But most of those things that I want to share with you because I'm curious about them, they're not like great plot points. They're not like an exciting, dramatic turn. And so you might, when you're looking at the Dan Harmon story circle of like, you need, go, search, find, take, return, change, you know, is 100 million pounds of peppers, it's not part of the need. I mean, I'm sure it fits in there somewhere, but it's like...
How does it fit? It's a question that's hard to answer.
So I think it is easy in documentary to gravitate towards making a film that doesn't have a story, that's just things you learned. And I do think there's still a value in that. So I don't feel like you have to... completely stick to a story circle. But if you're missing the entire story circle, then I think it won't be compelling enough for people to watch. They need some story to get them to the facts. If it's just a fact-based thing, it's not going to be interesting.
But tell me this. You didn't necessarily have your story in your mind before you went out and shot all this stuff, right? You kind of discovered that and maybe built it a little bit in the editing bay, too.
Yeah. I mean, as I was doing research, first it was just facts that I was discovering that I was excited about, that I knew should be in the film. But I think pretty early on from reading articles about David Tran, knew that, okay, this should be the David Tran story. So I at least knew there's a character who needs something and he has struggled.
Right.
And that's the essence of a story.
Right.
Is a person dealing with challenges. And then the dramatic question of will they reach what they their goal or not. So I think my advice to Goat Cheese for me is hopefully this cool place that you're making a film about has some characters that want something. And are there challenges they're facing? And if you don't have those three things, you need to find that, I think. I don't think you could just make a documentary about a place that right. doesn't have characters who want something. But I think if you can at least find some good characters, then you'll be able to fill out that story circle.
Very good. We got an email from Ron. Hi, Griffin. Love your podcast.
Nick's podcast, too.
He just picked up a GH5. I'm going to stop doing this in third person. I know you use the 12-35 Panasonic. I was wondering if I should consider the 12-60 2.8-4 instead.
Yeah. What do you think? So we're actually shooting with the 12-35 right now. That's your 12-35.
Yeah, don't touch it.
On your camera. I also have the same lens. It's the lens I shot almost all of Sriracha on. I love that lens for documentary. The only reason I could think you'd be excited about the new Lumix 12-60, even though it loses a little bit of light performance because it's not a constant aperture, I do think the 12-60 sounds like it'd be the perfect sightseeing lens.
Mm-hmm. Walking like, around, never taking the yeah, only lens you it's need the only in your lens. Bag. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to Italy for the first time, you probably want to bring a 12-60 because I know that with my 12-35, when I'm like in a taxi, and, oh, there's the Leaning Tower of Pisa over there or something. Actually, right. I've never been to Pisa, so I've never seen that. But, you know, if you try to, like, zoom in on a landmark in the distance with a 12-35, it's just not going to look – it's right. not enough zoom. But otherwise, I think the 12-35 is a very good filmmaking lens.
The problem I ran into – so before I bought the 12-35, I actually bought the Olympus – I think it's 12-40. It was something to 60.
Okay.
It was in that range.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing. It was a variable aperture, and it went from 2.8 to 4 or something yeah. like that. And I found that the aperture fell off way faster than I expected. And F4 is really, it's tough to use sometimes, you yeah. know?
It's so, half as much light
yeah,
as 2.8.
So for me, having the constant F2.8 was more valuable than having a tighter lens. But of course, I've got other lenses in my bag, and it sounds like Ron has a 25mm f1.7 and a 42.5 f1.7. So he's got some options
yeah.
as well. So I recommend 12-35 with a constant aperture. I think that
yeah.
that's more important.
And you know what I never really thought about doing, but you could do with the 12-35, at least on my cameras, is you could do the extended teleconversion feature. Sure. If you're shooting, I mean, you can't do that in photos really, but if you're shooting video in 4K, it will let you punch in about 20%. So you could put your 35mm on there and punch in.
Yeah, and he says he's got the GH5, so he's got that option too.
Yeah.
Jeremy Murray on Twitter asks, would the GH4 still be worth it if you don't have the money for a GH5 and are coming from Canon? Yes.
I think so.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's still a great camera. I mean, it's now something like 5 years old. Mm-hmm. I can't believe it's that old, but it's a powerful camera. I was using it until a year ago. I mean, I still use it sometimes when I need extra camera bodies.
I was using a GH2 up until like a year ago when I bought the G85. So, yeah. Yes, I would say so. Although, also look at the G85. I'm not sure where they price out a GH4 versus a G85. GH4
yeah.
is probably cheaper. I actually don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
So, if some of those more advanced features that the GH4 has that the G85 doesn't, if you need more manual controls and things like that, look at that. But if you're just trying to save money, the G85 I've been...
Yeah. And you know, one big thing the G85 has that the GH4 does not is in-body image stabilization.
Right. Email from Richard. What is the ISO sensitivity setting at which your GH5Ss are most comfortable?
I don't know if that's GH5Ss or GH5s.
Oh, it's probably GH5s.
That's one thing I don't like about the model name of the GH5S. Sometimes you can't tell if it's just plural or not. So native ISO for the GH5, and I also believe the GH5S, is ISO 400, which simply means at ISO 400, you're going to get optimum noise performance and dynamic range. The dynamic range can be a little bit better on the camera in ISO 400 than in ISO 200. So sometimes I try to not go below 400.
Right.
But to his question about what range I'm comfortable operating in, he mentions Hand Cut, the ICE documentary.
Yeah.
I shot that all between probably ISO 200 and ISO 1600. And I was comfortable. I was happy with all the footage I got out of there. So I don't think you have to be stuck at 400. But if that if your goal is to get the perfect amount of dynamic range from the camera, then
ISO
400 is where you want to be.
I got a YouTube comment from Sean Connolly, which sounds like Sean Connery, which I like. is there a video that goes over your process for doing this kind of conference? The quality is incredible, and if there's a delay between the two of you, it's hardly noticeable. I guess they're talking about our teleconferencing during the podcast.
At first I was like, you mean like the trade show I'm at? Like a conference? No. Yeah, he's talking about this. This is a common misconception that we do some sort of like video conference setup.
Right.
Which we don't.
We do not.
This is just our technique.
And what is that technique? Right. How do we do it?
So yeah, if you wanted to shoot a video podcast like ours,
where we're not in the same state even.
Right.
Except for today.
I mean, even today we're kind of shooting it the same way we normally would. There's one camera on Nick. There's one camera on me. The only difference is when we do it normally, Nick just sends me his footage over the internet.
Right.
You record your own audio, your own video.
And I just look at the wall instead of Griffin's beautiful face.
Right, yeah, we're not looking at anything. And then the way we're hearing ourselves is through a FaceTime audio call.
Right.
So we're really just doing a telephone call with two cameras involved.
Yep.
And then I think we've also found doing a telephone call or a FaceTime audio call has less lag than
doing video conferencing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so no reason to see each other.
And Apple just announced that FaceTime is going to now support groups. So I know for a lot of people, you know, if we had a guest or something, FaceTime would be out. We'd have to go to something like Skype, which is pretty common. But FaceTime is going to support up to like 32 people on a,
wow,
video or audio call, I believe.
So. This is funny because I almost sent you a message a week ago asking you this exact question because I wanted to do a three-way FaceTime and knew that FaceTime didn't support that. So I figured, well, Skype can do it, but my mom doesn't have Skype, so I'm not going to do that. Then I realized Facebook Messenger can support it.
Oh.
So anyone who's using Facebook, which is my family,
yeah,
we could all do it that way. But that's cool to know that FaceTime, do you know when that'll...
They just announced it at WWDC. I don't know what the release date is. Probably with iOS 12 in September or whatever it releases.
But yeah, anyone who has a phone and has two cameras could do a podcast setup like this.
Yeah, you could really do a three-way phone call. I bet the lag would be pretty low.
Oh, yeah.
Too,
yeah.
Right? So that's an easy way to do it.
And actually, this is something, this kind of technique is something I like to offer to people when they ask if they can interview me over Skype. I usually say, well, I have a camera here and I have a nice microphone here. Would you like me to capture it? And I can send you the thing afterwards. So if you don't want to have to edit the bad Skype recording,
right,
you could cut in all my good footage. And a lot of people like to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it.
Should we high five since
this week?
Can? Yeah! That was loud.
Yeah.
That was good.
I wonder if we clipped there.
I bet we did. Well, I'm sorry we couldn't solve my video problem.
Yeah.
That was interesting, though. That
just means you can...
We weren't lying when we said we had not pre-looked into the issue.
It just means I can never trust your Spark footage again. Never send me that
kind of footage. Sorry.
And I don't know what the fix would be besides you know, if we found the automatic settings, like once you've exported it, there's no way for me to like put it back together. I could get rid of that one duplicate frame, but I'm still gonna have that skipped frame every 10 frames. So I don't know.
Problem. It's a big problem. Good thing nobody noticed.
You should have seen my Final Cut timeline to try to diagnose your problem, because I pretty much went through with a blade tool and was making a slice every time I saw an error. And
so you could go back and figure out the pattern.
Yeah, and it was only when I did that I realized, oh, it is every 5 frames. Okay.
That's funny. Alrighty. Well, I guess next week we'll be back to our standard setup.
Yeah.
You You're not hanging out in Vegas for another week and a half, are you?
No, in fact, I leave tomorrow. So somehow I have to edit this podcast tonight so that it can be on the air
tomorrow. Tomorrow is... Oh, yeah. We're recording this a little later than normal.
Yeah.
Cutting it down to the wire. Alrighty. A pleasure, sir.
I'll talk to you right after this podcast as we continue to be here in person together.
Talk to you later, everybody. Man. Bye.
I don't know if we have an outtake this time.
I know, we're too good. How fast did we do that? Oh yeah, 37 minutes. It felt very tight.
Yeah. No lag.
It's better in person, I really think.
Yeah, it is.